everybody. Welcome to But What Do We Know podcast, episode 106. I'm Marissa.
And I'm Anna.
And we're back.
Did we have an episode last week? Because I feel like it's been a minute since we did this.
It feels like a long time, but no, we did.
Oh, you're right. We did.
We did. I don't know why it feels so long. You know why? I think it's because we're recording at 7 o'clock and not...
It's not that hour. And a full day, because we usually record on a Monday, and this is on a Tuesday recording. Maybe that's why.
That's right. I keep thinking today's Monday.
Today is not Monday.
It is not. It's Tuesday.
Which I guess is good news. It's almost one day closer to the weekend, not by much.
True.
Oh, so how have you been?
Pretty good. So, how have you been?
Pretty good. Not a whole lot happening for me.
No.
You got some of your photos done. Your fancy schmancy photos.
We got our engagement photos done last night. Models. That's why we are recording on a Tuesday. Models. Actually, Cliff and I, believe it or not, we may be the exact opposite of models. We were talking about it today, and he was like, I think maybe she expected more from us. And I was like...
Like, what?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I don't know. He's like, I think she thought that we would know how to do this, but we didn't. She literally said, like, we're just not good at it.
I don't know how I would ever do that. I don't know how to pose. I don't know how to feel comfortable in front of people. I don't like showing PDA in front of other people. Like,
well, we told our photographer, and I picked her specifically because, like, her pictures are more, like, candid. Mm-hmm. And I was like, we're not into the mushy stuff. God. So she gave us, like, a distinct period of time, and she was like, okay, so these are the pictures we're going to use to give to your parents. And I'm like, okay, cool. And she's like, so we're just going to do some, and then we're going to be done. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, I can deal with that.
Oh, it seems very,
But yeah, and then we had...
I was just going to say, it seems very, like, awkward to do any of that.
Well, Cliff and I don't really take pictures together anyway, so...
Same.
Like, we just don't, because usually, like, we're... doing something, so mm-hmm. we don't ever take pictures together, so it was strange in that way, but eventually it got better. We had a couple drinks.
There you go.
Listen, I highly recommend. It makes you feel better. But Andy was pretty good at being photographed.
Well, Andy is a model.
He is a model. He got really bored really fast, though, so he didn't last long. He had to go in the room.
He's a diva.
He couldn't handle it. He's such a Gen Z child, because she had a Polaroid camera, and he was like, he tilted his head so hard it looked like it was gonna come off. He's like, what the fuck?
He's so cute.
But so we had that, and then it was PinFest this weekend, so we had people.
I saw you guys were party hardying over the weekend.
We were partying hardying, and then I slept hard. So
that's the best, is the sleep after the party.
Oh, I love the sleep.
I fell asleep yesterday at like 8 o'clock at night. I was so Mondays, unless you know what it is, because we didn't podcast last night, so like usually, like, that's my schedule, like I know I'm gonna be podcasting. Yeah. And on the way home from work, I was like, oh, since we're not podcasting, like maybe I'll go to the gym. And I had like my gym bag, and then last minute, right before the exit, I'm like, no, I'm just gonna go home. And I went home and, like, completely passed out. I'm like, dude, if I don't have anything to do, I'm going to sleep. That's my prerogative. Oh my God, yeah.
I fucking love sleeping.
Oh, it's my favorite thing in the world. It's my favorite hobby.
I could sleep all day, every day.
We're probably depressed.
I was like, there's probably something wrong with me. And then I'm like, well, I did crash diet for 2 weeks.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
Drank all weekend, and then... So I'm like, maybe that might be why.
That could have something to do with it.
I feel better now, though.
Good. Are you still crash dieting?
Hell no. The pictures are over, baby.
Perfect.
I'm thinking just, you know, to get back to eating like a normal person. I was so sick of meat and cheese. Oh, my God.
I know. It makes you constipated.
Oh, it was bad.
I've been there.
Enough about me. Tell me about you. What's going on?
No, I have the most boring life in the world.
You do not.
I do. I'm literally not doing anything. All I would do is work and come home and cry and wake up in the morning crying, have to go to work, and then I sleep. And that's it. I feel so... I don't know why anyone listens to this intro. Well, they must listen to it for you, because you have the exciting life.
They don't.
And I have
usually
nothing.
I'm like, yeah, I didn't do anything.
Literally, my life is work, then going to yoga or the gym, and then sleeping and crying and hanging out with the cats.
That sounds like a great time.
So that's just
not
life.
The work, but...
Oh, we did go... Remember I told you we went to go to two house showings?
Yes.
Okay, they were total busts. I was so pissed off. And, like, this is why the housing market, I just don't understand it. So the first house we went to was, like, a remodel. Like, they fixed it up. And, you know, it looks fine on the surface. And, like, it looks new hardwood floors, new granite, blah, blah, blah. I don't even think it was real granite. It was, like, fake granite. Mm. But then, and so my uncle comes with us because he's, like, a contractor. So he knows, like, all the stuff. So we are looking around, and we get there a couple minutes before my uncle, and we meet with the realtor, and we go inside, and we're looking around, and we go upstairs, and we're upstairs, me, Eric, and the realtor, and my uncle busts in the house. He goes, Anna, you are not buying this house. And I'm like, oh my God. And I told the contractor my uncle was coming, and she looks at me, she's like, and he comes up the stairs, she goes, oh, Roman's your uncle? And I'm like, oh, no. She's like, I know Roman. Our kids go to school together. And I'm like, oh, God. So, like, he knew it was her. So he was, like, busting with her.
Is this Hot Uncle?
Yes.
I didn't know Hot Uncle had kids. Is he married?
Oh, my God. Well, he's divorced. His kids are 18 and, like, 22, 23.
Oh, jeez. That's all I had to ask.
He's like 46, 47 years old.
He had kids pretty young.
Yeah. I hope the realtor doesn't listen to this, but after my uncle left, he's like, don't listen to a word she says. And like, but the house, so it looked nice, right? But then he's looking at it, and like, there's no insulation in the windows, and he's might as well, like, bust open the doors in the winter, your heat's gonna go up. And then
he's right.
The back window, so that has like a sunroom, and I looked at the window, and like, they like fucking cut out the hole for the window and just like placed a window in there, but it didn't fit the actual hole that they cut out. It was like rigged around the edges, and I'm like,
oh no,
what the fuck. And then they painted the outside, but, like, the paint dripped onto the floor. So, Eric, like, it looks like a fucking kid painted this house. I'm like...
Oh, no.
Garbage. And so we went to go see it on on a Tuesday. And I think by Thursday or Friday, it was pending. So someone put an offer on it for, like, I don't even say how much it cost, but it was too much for what it was worth.
People are desperate.
So there was that house. And then down the street, another house was for sale. And it was, like, smaller, but, like, cute, whatever. And we go inside, and they have a little deck, and I go out on the deck, and the boards are not nailed in. They're, like, flip-flopping. I'm like, okay. And then they have a half-finished basement, and they have, like, an extra bathroom and a bedroom down there. So we go down the basement, then we go to the unfinished part, where they keep their litter boxes. They have two litter boxes. And Marissa, it fucking reeked like cats. And I have two cats, so, like, I, like, know what cat smells like, and I try to keep my house not smelling like a fucking cat, but, like, you have to clean your fucking house if you have cats. That's just part of it. So it fucking reeked, and I was like, you'll never get the smell out of this house. Like, once it's there forever. And it was, like, outdated and stuff. I'm like, no, thank you, not for what it's worth. That house is also pending, so I'm like, well.
Not for you.
Take that off the list, I guess.
It's okay. There'll be more.
And what everyone says, they're like, you have to at least go, like, and look at houses so you know what is out there and you know what to look for and what you want in a house. So I'm like, all right, it's fine. But I think probably in the fall we'll put in for our actual pre-authorization, like really start hammering down on the house thing.
Yeah, looking, hopefully things will start like loosening up a little.
That's bit. That's what everyone's saying, so send your thoughts and prayers to me, please, for the housing market. Talking about
thoughts and prayers to Anna.
Well, my friend had an epiphany a couple of weeks ago, and she decided that she needs to, like, get back into the church and religion and stuff. And so she did for, like, 2 weeks, and then she stopped. But she's like, I'm still going to, like, pray. So she's like, Anna, I pray every night that you and Eric find a house. Oh, I was like,
that's sweet. I was like,
thank you. Someone's praying for me because I'm not praying for myself.
Like, you gave up.
I was like, can you go to your church and put in, like, a communal prayer for me to find a house, like, in this market?
In the prayer book?
Yeah.
In the back. They're like, please help Anna.
Well, before, that's all my updates, but I did have a brink of tears that I wanted to share with you. I don't know if you had one.
So tell me why do you cry? Tell me why.
I don't think I did, but I want
to
hear
it. It was actually today, and it was a video, and
oh no,
Eric sent it to me, so I'm going to send it to you.
Oh no.
And, okay, so I don't think you saw it, because I wouldn't have seen it, Eric didn't tell me. It was a video of a cat that got onto the Yankee baseball field the other day. Oh my god, these are like my favorite videos. So like these cats just stumble upon like baseball fields and they go into the field and they have to like stop the game because there's a cat on the field. But like the cats are scared because like everyone's yelling and like they're being chased around. And so he sent me this cat. It was at the Yankee Stadium, and they had to, like, chase him off the field, but you could tell, because people are like, go, cat, because, like, it's funny, but, like, you could tell he's so scared, because there's so many people. So,
let me see.
Eric sent it to me, I was like, he must have been so scared. You have to watch the whole thing now.
He's probably really scared.
I know.
I love his little legs. How did they get there? Just because he's just stray?
Well, after I sat down, I'm like, how did they get on there? And he's like, well, they're in New York. They're in the Bronx. And it's probably just a stray cat.
True.
And it's in the middle of a field. And he said stadiums have, like, rats in it, too. So he probably just, like, slipped under a gate or something.
Can you imagine you slip under and you're like, what the fuck?
He's like, this is not what I wanted.
Like, I just wanted peace.
I think about, like, once he finally gets out, like, did he go back to his, like, stray cat friends? I'm like, guess where I was today?
I was at the Yankee Stadium. Oh, poor guy. All right, I'm not gonna stay here and go, for 4 minutes straight. You'll be like, shut the fuck up.
But that, holy shit. He sent to me when I was at work, and I, like, watched it, and I started crying. I was like, I just feel so bad. Like, no one cares. Because I feel like people don't, like, give a shit about cats, you know? So
no.
And so I'm like, if I was there, I'd be crying, because I'm like, I could tell how my cats would be if they were surrounded by, like, hundreds of people yelling at them. Like, come on. Yeah. Being chased around.
I'd be horrified.
Oh, that was my little tears this week.
I don't think that I cried this week.
Good for you.
This past week.
Good for you, girl.
Yeah, I really don't think that I did.
Proud of you.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I guess we should just, like, jump right into it, right?
Let's do it.
Before we do, let's hear a word from our sponsor. So, our first sponsor is Escandalo. And Hair by Escandalo is a salon on the south side of Bethlehem in Pennsylvania that caters to laid-back and fun people who want to have the best hair in town. They also have a full service salon and spa at Escandalo, the other side, otherwise known as just the other side. The spa is run by Cassie, and Cassie has over 6 years experience as an esthetician. She exudes professionalism and is super sweet and knowledgeable. She loves facials, microblading, dermaplaning, lash and brow tinting. She offers full body waxing and doesn't gender any of her services. All are welcome. It's no longer July, but I'm sure Escandalo will still offer 10% off if you mention the podcast when you check out. You can visit them on Instagram and click the link in their bio at Escandalo Hair or at Escandalo.theotherside. You can visit their website at EscandaloHair.com. And you can schedule a virtual consultation if you're a new client as well.
What do you got, Marissa? So,
it's a good topic. It's interesting. I found it on TikTok. Mm-hmm. And then so Kelsey, my number one girl crush, mm-hmm. her husband Richie actually just sent me this same story on TikTok as well.
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, it's like destiny, but I think I did a good job.
Okay.
It's a little bit messy, but it's a messy case. So.
Oh, geez. Okay.
It's in another country.
Okay.
So it's the story of Grace Mullane.
Hmm.
Although it's also like the Tinder murder case.
Oh, this was actually just on my TikTok yesterday.
Yes. It must be like trending or something.
Yeah.
I have no idea. But so I was like, oh, this seems pretty interesting. Like, I've definitely heard of it, but I don't know anything about it. Mm-hmm. So I figured I would pick this for this week. So I hope I do it justice.
I'm sure you did fine.
I hope so. So Grace Mullane was born on December 2nd, 1996 in Wickford, Essex. She had recently graduated from the University of Lincoln with a bachelor's degree in advertising and marketing. If you don't know, Essex is in the UK, because I feel like I wouldn't have known that. At 21 years old, after she graduated from college with her bachelor's degree, she decided to take a gap year to travel the world. And everybody really liked Grace. They said she was super loving, very kind and outgoing. Just a fun person to be around, but I think she wanted to broaden her horizons a little bit before going to get like a job or maybe moving on to school. Mm-hmm. I'm not totally sure what she wanted to do. So Grace started her trip in Peru. She was 21 years old. I think I said that already. And she stayed in Peru for 6 weeks. She entered New Zealand on November 20th of 2018, and she traveled around the North Island of New Zealand. Grace spoke with her family every day, so she kind of like kept them updated on everything. She texted them all the time. She would FaceTime them, call them, whatever. And she sent them pictures throughout the day where she was. So like, mm-hmm. she kind of like had them along with her all the time. So she was almost in constant contact with her family.
Right.
So she arrived in Auckland, New Zealand on November 30th of 2018. And she was going to be in New Zealand for her birthday that year. So her 22nd birthday. And her birthday was on December 2nd. And so her family was like sending her, you know, whatever, pictures,
mm-hmm.
videos, everything to say happy birthday. But she didn't respond right away to any of these. And they're like, that's weird, but maybe she's just out
mm-hmm.
celebrating her birthday. And so they kind of let it go for a day, but then two more days passed. And Grace's family reported her as missing with New Zealand police on the third day. So police investigated. They went to her hostel in Auckland, and they didn't find her there, of course. But they said there's no sign of a struggle, and everything looks kind of just like she had been there and then maybe packed to go on a trip or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing looked like she had rushed out of there. So they talked to the staff of the hostel, and they reported seeing Grace on December 1st. They said she went out, and they never saw her return. So Grace's father immediately flew to New Zealand, and he started doing any kind of, like, press release or media or anything like that ASAP.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of pleading with the public for information, because there wasn't a whole lot of it, and unfortunately that's not, it wasn't their home country, so there, sure. It was harder for them to navigate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from what I know about New Zealand, I feel like it's a pretty peaceful country.
I would think so, too.
Like, it seems, from what I know, you don't hear about a lot of New Zealand crimes.
Mm-hmm.
So, it...
Oh, well, I feel like they have a good, like, prison system. Like, it's rehabilitative. So, like, when crimes happen, yeah. They're not repeat offenders because they're rehabilitated.
Yeah. So, I think this was, like, kind of shocking for everybody. Mm-hmm. But police? So, police obviously didn't have access to Grace's cell phone. But they were able to check her social media, where she was obviously pretty active all the time. So she got a comment on, they didn't notice like anything weird, except that she had gotten a comment from a man on one of her photos saying, "Beautiful, very radiant." And the man looked to be around Grace's age, and his name was Jesse Kempton. So So they spoke with one of Grace's friends, and Grace reported to the police that Grace had met Jesse on Tinder, and they decided to go on a date. And police basically said there was no evidence of foul play until, unfortunately, Grace's body was found. This kind of jumps around a little bit, because I got a bunch of different information here.
Mm-hmm.
So they found Grace's body on December 9th at around 4 p.m. off of Scenic Drive in Waitakere Ranges.
Okay.
Sounds right.
Sounds good.
Around 12 miles west of Auckland, which is where she was staying. So post-mortem examination was done the next day, and they did some investigations of the area where her body was found on the 11th, so the third day. Police asked for the public's help in finding a shovel they believed was related to the inquiry. It was like a specific kind of shovel.
Mm.
So that was like kind of the first thing that led the public to think something was weird.
Yeah.
So there were bruises on Grace's arm and neck, and it showed a pathologist, Simon Stables, testified in court that Grace's body had been, the bruising was consistent with someone who had been restrained and asphyxiated, so she was most likely strangled to death. It looks like for around like 4 to 5 minutes it took.
Ugh.
She also had a blood alcohol concentration at 106 milligrams of alcohol per 100 milliliters of blood, which is over the legal driving limit in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
The legal driving limit is 50 milligrams per 100 milliliters.
Okay, she's like double.
So she's pretty over. So police decided to, they really didn't have any leads for anything. So they decided to bring back in Jesse Kempton, the guy she had gone on a date with, because her Grace's friend, I think her name was like Amana or something like that. I don't totally know her name. She told police that Jesse was with Grace on the evening of December 1st, which was the last time that anyone had seen her.
Mm-hmm.
And Grace said that she had a bad feeling about it when she went out with this Jesse guy. Grace's friend told police that she had a bad feeling about this mm-hmm. Jesse guy. She didn't have any reason for it, and Grace had even texted her that night saying, like, oh, she was having a great time.
Okay.
But she still felt uneasy about it. So they're like, okay, let's just talk to him again. And so they went, he said, so Jesse said, like, they went out that night, and that at 10 o'clock that evening of December 1st, they parted ways. But luckily, in other countries, there is a lot of CCTV footage everywhere. Mm-hmm. So, police found some CCTV footage of Jesse and Grace on their date the evening of December 1st. So, at around 9 p.m., she was seen in Victoria Street in Auckland's Central Business District. They met up, they, like, smiled and hugged and everything like that, and then they went to get some drinks and some food. They, about 15 minutes later, she went to a place called Sky City. Basically, they went to a couple different restaurants mm-hmm. and got a lot of alcohol. Like, they drank
right,
a lot.
Right.
And around 8:40, there was video. The CCTV footage showed Jesse like holding her head and leaning her in, and they kissed. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of like kissed and had drinks for the rest of the night. And like the footage, she looks like she's having a great time.
Right.
Like, there's nothing that you would watch that and be like, okay, yeah, she looks
nothing
a little
suspicious.
Scared.
Yeah.
Like, they look like they're having a good date, and it was all in public, so like. Mm-hmm. She didn't do anything wrong. She did it in a super... She met him in a super
right,
public
yeah.
place. And texted her friend and let her know, like, mm-hmm. where she was going. So, she was... Grace was last seen on CCTV footage at about 9:41 p.m. at the City Life Hotel. And Jesse Kempton was staying at this hotel in room 308. This was on Queen Street. They were seen entering the hotel... But Grace was never seen leaving the hotel.
Mm-mm.
So they brought in Jesse again, and they arrested him. And Jesse immediately said, I didn't kill Grace Mullane. Like, he's like, I didn't kill her. So they're like, so they go into this whole thing with Jesse, because he's a little bit suspicious.
Right.
So the day of December 1st, Jesse had rented a red Toyota hatchback, and he bought a new suitcase on that day.
Mm-hmm.
He had also rented a carpet cleaning machine called the Rug Doctor that he told police he got to bring to the hotel because he spilled red wine on the carpet in the hotel.
I think the hotel takes care of that.
Yeah, I don't think you don't need a rug thing to go in the hotel. So they went to Jesse's home, and on his computer in his apartment, police found several pretty concerning searches, including hottest fire, rigor mortis,
oh my God,
flesh-eating birds, and the Waitakere Ranges, which is where Grace's body uh-huh. was found. They also found bloodstains with luminol in Jesse's bedroom. So he was taken into custody on December 8th at 3 p.m. So, like, a little bit of background about Jesse. He was born in the Wellington region. I believe he was born... Or no, he was in New Zealand. I'm sorry. But he lived in Australia, I believe, as well. So after his parents separated, and so he was raised by his father and his grandfather, and his mom had moved... And he just had like a normal life. He went to college. He played softball, like college level softball. Excuse me. He worked as a bartender, a builder, and he moved to Australia. He lived in Australia between 2013 and 2016. And he didn't really talk to his family.
Mm-hmm.
He also had a drunk driving conviction in New Zealand and had been arrested for disorderly behavior in Auckland and Sydney, Australia.
Party hardy.
So, Jesse's grandfather said that maybe Jesse fathered a child, but they couldn't tell.
Oh,
they,
okay.
They never, like, followed up. Just, like, a fun fact.
I just love that slide.
Yeah, just like a little kid. So, when they brought Jesse in... His tone changed, and he's like, I didn't kill Grace on purpose.
Oh, no.
So, he basically said that Grace was really into rough sex.
Get out.
I know. This is one of the dumbest fucking things. I hate when dudes do this. So I didn't know this, but fun fact, this is actually like called like the 50 Shades defense.
Oh my god, in court. Get out.
I know.
Ugh. Barf.
But I'll get to that later. So yeah, he said that Grace was like really into bondage and rough sex. And he said that they were super drunk, which they were, and they were having sex, and it was like really rough. And they I guess were done. And he got up and he went to the bathroom, and when he came back, Grace's nose was bleeding and she was dead.
Okay, I'm sorry. This is their first date, and he's like, she was really into rough sex. Like, you don't know how rough someone is into it the first date.
Exactly.
Like, get out.
And, like, from what I understand about, like, the BDSM community, I think that as someone who would be into that, it would be a much more responsible situation.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, if she was truly into it, I feel that that people who are into that community and like that world, they have so many different like rules and safety methods and things like that. Like, it seems weird that they would get so far that she would die
on the with the some guy the first time that she's like hooking up with him.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, police knew this was, like, a BS.
Yeah.
So they were like, okay, well, so what did you do the next day? So he's like, he went to go pick up cleaning products. And then he went to get drinks with a friend.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. How nice.
There's a dead girl in your room.
What the fuck? That's the last thing I would think about. God. But so then he got back to the hotel, and I don't know the full details about how this happened, but he put Grace's body in a suitcase. Mm-hmm. The suitcase that he had coincidentally just bought that day. So he went to the bathroom, or no, I'm sorry. he cleaned out. No, I'm jumping ahead. He wheeled the body through the hotel in one of those little like carriage things. And that's, you can see him on the hotel's security footage with the suitcase.
That's what I think is the most eerie part, is watching those videos, like, knowing that there's a body inside that suitcase that he's rolling around.
And it's not that big of a suitcase.
No, he, like, folded her up in there. Ugh.
But yeah, you can watch all of this. It's fucking horrible. Freaky. So, yeah, and then he went to the Waitakere Ranges. I'm sorry if I'm not saying that right. And he put her in his rental car. He went and bought a shovel, and then he buried her. He cleaned out the rental car, he cleaned the hotel room, and then he went home. Mm-hmm. Like, nothing ever happened. But so, the friend that Jesse had gone with that day was a woman. He was going on a date with a woman that he had also met on Tinder.
Great.
Yeah. But the woman was a journalist, which actually kind of, like, worked out in her own favor. She was very... Mm-hmm. She wrote a huge, like, expose on him. And so they... She said that it was, like, pretty normal at first, and she liked him. He seemed nice. And then he started talking about how that he was, like, I'm like really paraphrasing here, but he was talking about how he was friends with police officers, and there's been a lot of bodies turning up for no reason.
What?
Yeah. And the girl was like uncomfortable, of course, so she was just like, oh yeah, I am a journalist, so like I've done stories on that kind of stuff. And then he tells her this story about how his friend was having rough sex with his girlfriend. The friend's girlfriend was having... The friend and his girlfriend were having rough sex. And his friend accidentally killed his girlfriend from the rough sex. And then he got arrested for murder. And then he said the quote... What the hell? He said to her, "It's crazy how a man can make one wrong move and go to jail for the rest of their life."
Well, if that one wrong move is killing someone, then yeah, probably. I think so.
What the fuck? So she was, like, very freaked out, and she kind of, like, excused herself, but she didn't go in her car because she knew something was up, so she kind of, like, circled around until she actually went to her car so that she knew he wasn't following her. So, like, she got the vibe. Something was bad. So, yeah, so Jesse was obviously arrested. And he went to court. And in his trial, he tried to go for name suppression. Just basically that, like, the court wouldn't reveal his name to the media. Mm-hmm. And it was appealed by the defense. And then it triggered an interim name suppression for a period of 20 working days. So Google actually, someone from Google leaked Jesse Kempson's name in an email. So people found it out right away. So there were like 100,000 searches for his name on Google. And whatever, this whole big thing happened. The guy got like sued or something like that for doing this. But who the fuck cares? Like, I'm happy he did it. So Jesse was remanded in custody and appeared in the Auckland High Court on January 16th, 2019, where he pleaded not guilty. His identity remained suppressed, technically, pending an appeal. So he was formally identified on December 22nd, 2020. And the reason why he wanted his name suppressed was that he had been convicted of 9 total charges of rape, sexual violation, threatening to kill, and assault in 2 sexual violence trials.
Oh my god.
Independent of the Grace and Lane
case. Ew, so he's a fucking predator.
Yup.
Well, it wasn't a one-time mistake.
No. So 3 female witnesses came forward. Several of them did it through, like, video. Mm-hmm. In court and had their name or had their voices and their faces blurred because they were so scared of him.
Oh my god.
And they told the court that they had also met Jesse through Tinder and that they testified he liked masochistic and bondage sex, including choking. One woman claimed that he had sexually assaulted her and sat on top of her until she passed out. Oh my god. And then another woman came forward stating he had threatened to stab her and force her to do humiliating sexual acts.
Oh my god.
So the defense team, led by Ian Brookie, argued that Grace's death was the result of consensual sexual misadventure.
Get out.
I can't. So they said that Grace had an interest in bondage and sadomasochism, and she asked Jesse to choke her during sex. And then Jesse killed her by accident, and he tried to hide the body because he panicked. He's so scared.
Yeah, he panicked. He bought a suitcase. He bought cleaning products. He bought a shovel. Sounds like a big panic.
Yeah, it sounds like you thought about this way too fucking much. Like,
rented a car, cleaned out the car, like...
Rented... The fucking carpet machine gets me.
Yeah, I don't even know where to get a carpet machine.
And bringing it to a hotel and not thinking that's weird.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Excuse me. So, the trial lasted 3 weeks, and New Zealand was, like, ashamed of this.
Oh, yeah.
The prime minister actually came forward and apologized publicly to the family and was like, I'm so sorry, like, this doesn't happen here, kind of thing. And the jury, which consisted of 7 women and 5 men, returned a verdict of guilty on November 22nd, 2019. They deliberated, I've seen 3 hours and I've also seen 5 hours. Okay. And Grace's parents were very happy, and several members of the jury actually wept following the verdict. Aww. And Jesse said to them, "You have no reason to convict me. You're full of shit, mate."
Oh, okay. Well, you're
fucking rude.
That's That means nothing. Go ahead.
Yeah. So on February 21st, 2020, Jesse Kempson was sentenced to life in prison with a minimum non-parole period of 17 years. Mm-hmm. And on June 29th, 2021, so pretty recently, the Supreme Court dismissed Kempson's application for leave to appeal the verdict, which exhausted all legal avenues to overturn his conviction.
Wow.
So he will be in prison for the rest of his life.
Wow.
Thank God.
Well, it sounds like he'll be in prison for at least 17 years and then might be paroled.
Is that what that means?
Well, it says life in prison with a non-parole period of 17 years. So it sounds like after 17 years, he's eligible for parole. I don't know if he'll get it, but...
Oh.
Because I think, like, New Zealand and, you know, all the better countries, like, I don't think they really do, like, life imprisonment. Because I know, like, Canada doesn't do life imprisonment. So it must be, like, one of those types of situations. Mm. Like, he must have to, like, prove himself that he's... quote-unquote, rehabilitated.
So, New Zealand police are actually still actively asking any women to come forward who might have been assaulted by Jesse Kempson.
Oh, maybe that'll increase his sentence.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. And then this case actually, like I said before, it's kind of helping in a terrible way. They're aiding the fight to ban the 50 Shades defense in the courtroom.
Yeah.
Which basically is any defense of... It was just rough sex that got out of hand.
Gross.
Which is such a bullshit excuse.
It's too easy of an excuse.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Yeah, But that's my one. It's a definite little shorty, but...
No.
I know everyone's seen it on TikTok.
That was more detailed than I knew about the case. All I knew about it was that they went on a Tinder date and he killed her and put her in a suitcase. That's literally all I knew about it.
It's fucking terrible.
Horrible.
Like, what a sick fuck. She just wanted to go and travel the world.
I tell people all the time who's, like, dating in today's day and age, I'm like, God bless you. Like, I don't know how you do it. Like, me and Eric started dating kind of, like, really before online dating was a thing. And my friends that are online dating now and just, like, meeting up with random people, I'm just like, I don't know how you do it, because I definitely would not survive. I would not be able to do it. But you gotta be careful. And she was being careful. She went out to public places. Like, I guess you just gotta, like, be careful of, like, how much you're drinking and, like, not to isolate yourself with someone on a first date. I don't know. Like, she didn't deserve it, obviously, but it's scary.
No, but be careful for sure.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure, you know, a lot of people that listen to this do online dating.
Yeah. Oh, scary world.
So be careful.
Well, thanks, Marissa.
Thank you.
Before we go into mine, we have our other sponsor, Little Bean Soapery, which you got the shipment of their syrup.
Yeah. Do you prefer lavender or Nag Champa?
What's Nag Champa?
It smells like incense.
Oh, I like them both. So whichever you don't want.
Okay. Well, and Eric actually got a soap too.
Oh,
I didn't realize one of the soaps were for the boys.
For the boys. Cute.
For the boys.
Cute, cute, cute. So Little Bean Soapery is a woman-owned, handcrafted soap business specializing in skin-loving, cold-processed soaps, seasonal and theme soaps, sugar scrubs, body butters, body oils, beard oils, and bath bombs and soaks. The products are primarily created by Brandy with the help of her mother, Lori, with moving setup and building help from her boyfriend, Brian. The Little Bean herself, Brandy's daughter, Rosa, can be found picking fragrances, colors, designs, and helpings to stir and mold bath bombs. Little Bean Soapery is truly a small family business that prides itself on creating high quality and unique body care products. You can see what Little Bean Soapery is up to on Facebook and Instagram and order products off their social media or at littlebeansoapery.com.
Yay.
So excited for my soaps.
Oh, you're going to love them.
Eric's been recently into, like, handcrafted soaps.
Oh my God.
It's, like, good timing. He wanted to go to, like, you know, one of the stores near us. He's like, I think I really need, like, a handcrafted soap. I was like, who are you?
Wait, hold on. Let me see what the guy sent is. It is cedar bergamot.
Ooh. Bergamot.
It smells good. It
smells manly.
It smells manly, but like also you could use it if you wanted it.
I like the nature scents. Like those are always really good.
Yes.
Well, they're all like nature scents. Nice. Woodsy. Okay. So my topic, it is so short and I'm so pissed off because
it's probably like 20.
No, Marissa.
It's probably like 45 minutes long. It's, like it's so short.
No, it's literally nothing. So I was wanting to do this and okay, so it's a UFO abduction case and Ooh. It's one of like the better known ones. So I'm like, okay, if it's better known, there's going to be so much information about it.
Yeah.
But there isn't. And there's like barely any articles. And there, like, I mean, there's like a Wikipedia page, but like what's in the Wikipedia page is basically what's in all of the other articles. Like there's.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, like, let me see what else I can find. Like, God damn it, I listened to a Joe Rogan podcast episode for this.
Ooh.
I put myself through, like, the 2 hours of a Joe Rogan podcast to listen to this. And I watched a documentary that is on Amazon. Not even an Amazon Prime video. It's just on Amazon for free. Literally, like, just to watch this. So, like, that's how little information there is on here. So this is the UFO abduction case of Travis Walton. Like, in America, like, I mean, there's UFO cases or abduction cases internationally, but in America, it's, like, number one, Betty and Barney Hill, number two, Travis yeah. Walton. Like, he's up there with them, but, like, compared to Betty and Barney Hill, like, 5% of the information. So,
damn,
super short, and I'm going to give you my thoughts about it afterwards.
Okay, okay.
Okay, so Travis Walton, this occurred on November 5th, 1975. So at that time, he was in his early 20s, I think like 22, 23 years old, and he was working as a logger in a town called Snowflake, Arizona, which I think is mm-hmm. so cute that there's a town Adorable. Called Snowflake in Arizona. But he was working with a group of other loggers. I think there were six of them total on this team. And they were working in the Apache Sitgravis National Forest. And they were going out there. And from what I read, the group of guys, they weren't, like, best buddies. Like, they actually, some of them had, like, conflict with one another. So it wasn't, like, a gang of friends going out. But they were out working. And they went to, they were in a truck and they were going out on this work site, and there were six of them in the car. And as they were approaching this site, they saw a saucer-shaped object hovering over the ground.
Wait, is this the one that movie's about?
Fire, yeah. What's it called? Fire. Shit, I just had it. Fire in the Sky.
Is it fire? Yeah. Because Cliff was like, how would you never watch this movie? And we watched it, and it was pretty good.
Okay, well, I'll talk about Fire in the Sky, too. So, yeah, that it's based on, the Fire in the Sky is based off of this case. So, they saw this, like, saucer shape in the sky, and when they saw it, they said, like, it was probably, like, 100 feet away from where their car was. And they like, slowed down the car, and they said that it was, like, kind of hovering over the ground. It wasn't, like, super high in the air. So, as they were approaching it, Travis, I don't know, had this urge to, like, get out of the car and, like, approach the object. And he said, like, he didn't even think. Like, it was just something that he was compelled to do. And the rest of the guys, like, stayed in the car. And as he approached the object, a beam of light came out of it. And it knocked him unconscious. And so the other guys in the car, they were like, holy shit. And as they watched Travis being, like, taken up into this craft by the beam of light, they fucking drove off. Like, they left.
Oh, my God.
But you know what? I don't know that I blame them, because I feel like I'd be like, well,
True.
If I don't leave, they're going to take me, too.
Well, also, I'd be like, a dumbass just got out of the car for no reason.
Yeah, like, yeah. So, they like, fucking left. And Travis was unconscious. And so, what happens is that he went unconscious, the guys left, and he was gone for 5 days and 6 hours. And while he was gone, like, he was reported missing. I think his brother reported him missing. Like, I don't know where he is. And during this time period, like, they sent out, like, scent dogs. Like, the crew told them, like, where he was, like, or where they last saw him or whatever. They had, like, crews going out looking for him. No one can fucking find him in the area. And during that time period, the police thought the crew that he was with killed him and, like, got rid of his body because they're like, well, you guys were the last ones with him. And he, like, you got fucking abducted by aliens. Is that what you're telling us? Now. And there was, like, tension within the group. So, like, they weren't, like, the best of friends. So they thought, like, oh, like, you guys had some kind of beef. You fucking took him out to Snowflake, Arizona and killed him and, like, dumped his body.
I mean, I would probably think that, too, honestly.
And they didn't have, like, a defense other than, like, no, like, we didn't.
We didn't.
But then Travis emerged after those 5 days, like, on the side of the road, and he looked haggard. Like, he had lost, I think they said, like, 10 pounds. He had, like, a beard growth of 5 days, and he was wearing the same clothes that he was last seen wearing. So after he came back from his disappearance, he's like, I was abducted by aliens. Like, I remember brief moments of it, but, like, I don't remember the whole thing. So they had him go under hypnosis to try to recall the events of what happened. So some of the story of what happened is partially his memory and then partially came from the hypnosis. So he says after he was taken aboard the craft, he woke up in a hospital-like room and he was being observed by 3 short, bald creatures. So when he woke up and saw these creatures, he was trying to fight with one of them and he picked, I guess there was, like, either a glass or a plastic rod near him. So he, like, picked it up to try to hit one of them with them. But he didn't. Like, I guess it wasn't, like, he didn't have the strength to do it or what. Or, like, they had control over him. So he said he wasn't able to fight them off. And he said that he was taken from that hospital-like room to another room by a human wearing a helmet. And he said then that's when there was 3 other humans that were put in a clear plastic mask over his face.
Mm.
And he said, like, that's kind of all he remembered until he was found walking on the highway, like, those 5 days later. So let me just go down my notes here. Okay. So that was pretty much, like, the entire, information that they got from him, both from memory and from the hypnosis. So then obviously when this came out and, like, it was sensationalized and people are like, dude, this guy's, like, a fucking, like, doing it for a story, doing it for money, like, he's, we don't believe him. And he claims, like, no, like, this, I have no reason to make up the story, like, this is what happened to me. But once they did some investigating, there's, like, reporters, investigators, who said that members of Travis's family said that Travis was obsessed with UFOs. And he said that, they said that Travis also talked about being abducted in previous experiences. He claims to have been abducted in his earlier years as well.
Okay.
And Travis said that he admitted that he's like, oh yeah, like, I did watch a TV, made-for-TV movie a couple of weeks ago about a UFO kidnapping case, but, like, that has nothing to do with my kidnapping case. And they also said, like, investigators were like, it's kind of weird that, like, his family didn't seem too concerned that he had disappeared. So they thought that, like, maybe his family was, like, in on it. But the one family member that was, like, pretty active was his older brother, Dwayne. And Dwayne was, like, the one that was really looking for him. But it seemed, I read somewhere, too, that Dwayne said, oh, he's just, quote-unquote, lost in space. So I don't know if Dwayne was also into the whole UFO thing.
Or he was just being cocky.
Right, right. There was one investigator said that Travis's boss for the logging company was, like, behind in their logging contract, so his boss was in on it and said, like, oh, the reason we couldn't fulfill the contract is because our guy got, like, abducted by UFOs. And
what a great reason.
And when they, like, asked his boss about it, like, later on, after all this happened, his boss was like, that's fucking bullshit. Like, he's like, that's not true. So in the days after he had came back and discussed his abduction, the National Enquirer awarded Walton and his coworkers a $5,000 prize for the, quote, best UFO case of the year.
What?
Yeah. But they gave them that money after the National Enquirer had them take polygraph tests that were administered by the Enquirer and the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization. So they were like, okay, you claim that this happened to you, like, let's take polygraph tests. So they took polygraph tests, and I've read different things. So I read that in the first test, all of them passed, except for one whose results came back as inconclusive. But then I read another one that they said, like, they did additional polygraph tests and they came back as deceptive. So I don't put too much weight into polygraph tests. Like, I don't really believe in them.
Yeah.
Some people say that the ones that they had passed, that it seemed like Travis was using deception techniques for polygraph tests, like holding your breath or, like, tapping your feet. They said, like, those are some ways to, like, get around deception on a polygraph test. So whether he passed or didn't, I don't really feel like that makes any difference for me anyway.
Yeah.
So when I was listening to Travis on the Joe Rogan podcast, and he was actually on pretty recently, like, I want to say within the last month or so.
Yeah, I feel like I just heard about him being on there.
Yeah, he was on there not too long ago. And when he talked about the experience, he gave pretty much the exact same storyline that's been fed over the years. Like, there was no any variation in his story. There was no additional details. There was no less details. It was pretty much like, I woke up in this hospital-like room with three alien-like creatures. He doesn't remember any, like, experiments being done on him. But what he did say was, it seems like they didn't talk to him, obviously, but he said it seemed like they were able to communicate telepathically. So, and he said they were emotionless, too. So he said, like, they were able to communicate without expressing facial features, without talking. So he said, like, they are beyond us in terms of communication. He did say, he mentioned how he talked about before, that he claims that he was abducted by UFOs before. He did talk about that on the Joe Rogan podcast. So he said when he was a kid, I don't remember exactly what he said, but I think he said when he was a kid, he was at home and he thought he saw, like, a creature in the house that was non-human-like. Mm-hmm. And so he told his sister or his siblings the next day. And the siblings were just like, oh, like, that was a dream. You were just dreaming. And he's like, no, like, it felt very real. But he didn't really give much more information other than that. Then he had this feeling he saw this thing. And he thinks, well, reflecting now as an adult, that it was, like, an alien encounter. And which they say, like, I mean, not all the time, but they say, like, people who have been abducted by aliens, like, they may experience that throughout their life.
Yeah.
And there's a documentary, like I said, on Amazon, and it's just called Travis. And when Travis talked about it on the podcast, he was like, I'm so embarrassed that they named the documentary Travis. Like, I would never want a documentary just called by my name.
Why would that embarrass him out of all of the things? Like,
well, it's so I think, like, when this first happened in the 70s, like, he was getting a lot of media coverage, and he said it was, like, incessant. Like, there were reporters at his door, mm-hmm. they're, like, blowing up his phone, and I read, like, he actually cut off his landline for 10 years after it happened, oh, because people just kept, like, blowing up his phone, and he couldn't get away from it. And he's not, like, any of, like, the other, like, ufologists that we've heard of. Like, he's been to, like, conferences, and he's done interviews and stuff, but he's not, I don't feel like, mm-hmm. a well-known name in, like, the general public, I should say. I think, like, people who's into the stuff that we're into probably have heard of him, but not in the general, like, everyone knows who Betty and Barney Hill is. People know, don't know who Travis Walton is. So there is a movie, called Fire in the Sky that came out in 1993 that is based off of Walton's experience. And Travis Walton, like, was obviously aware of the movie, and he gave, like, feedback, but he said the movie is grossly exaggerated on what happened.
It seems that way, yeah.
Yeah, and he said, he's like, I gave them, like, the base story, which is the minimal details he provided, and they just, like, took it to Hollywood and made a big production out of it. And he kind of said, like, I kind of wish that they didn't, because that's not my experience. But at the same time, it's not a documentary. It's a feature film.
It's a movie.
So he's like, I can't really be mad for them making a movie with, you know, their artistic liberties. But that's definitely not what happened in my situation.
Yeah, when you were telling the story, I'm like, this is, like, I mean, I get where they got the inspiration, but I'm like, this is not, like, the movie.
I didn't see the movie, so I don't know. But from what I read, it's, like, a minuscule piece of what actually happened.
Yeah.
So I forget which article I read this in, but they went back to the area where this abduction happened, and he actually reunited with his crew, some of the crew members. And it was, like, the first time they were together in, like, decades. And they gave interviews to, I don't know, it was like a conference kind of people that came and asked questions about the experience. And he said that, I think the other crew member's name is Mike Rogers that was there. He said, they asked him, like, if they felt like this had affected his life in any way. And he said that it affected my life for about 2 weeks. he said, but then, like, after, he's like, I went somewhere where no one knew me, no one knew about the event, and no one really believed us. So it was, like, it seemed like just in the area, people really knew what was happening. And someone asked him, like, how do you feel about, like, you leaving Travis when he was abducted? He's like, oh, I guess we shouldn't have left. Like, I feel, like, really bad about that. But then Travis said, I guess after a while, after, like, he had been abducted, the crew came back, like, quite some time later to see if he was still there. And Travis was like, oh, I think it was heroic of them to come back, seeing what they just saw. And, like, they didn't have any, like, weapons on them or anything. And Mike was like, no, it wasn't heroic of us. Like, I was like, they probably just were like, are we going to get in trouble because we lost a crew member?
Yeah, like, what the fuck?
But when they came back, obviously there was nothing there. So Travis, when he was on the podcast, on the Joe Rogan podcast, he said, I don't know how true this is because I didn't do the fact checking, but he said that area where he was abducted has the second highest amount of lightning strikes in the country other than the Everglades. Oh. And he said, well, the Everglades makes sense because it's, like, near water and that's, like, more prominent, but Arizona's, like, inbound, so there's no water. But he says the second highest amount of lightning strikes, and he feels like that has something to do with why the aliens were there. So he's wondering if they were, like, checking the land or, like, seeing what was happening, and, like, Travis and the crew just happened to come upon them. And he's wondering if, because he thinks he had that alien encounter as a child, like, maybe that's what compelled him to get out of the vehicle without even thinking, and they took him on board. But there's, like, no, like, this happened in 1975, and the details that I gave to you is basically all the information that's been out for the last, like, 50 years, basically. There's been, like, no additional information that's come out about this.
Well, I feel like he hasn't given any additional information.
Well, I feel like he doesn't have anymore. I feel like Which makes me feel like maybe it happened, because I feel like if it was a story he was trying to sell, it would have been more theatric. Like, we've heard abduction cases where they're like, oh, they, like, poked and prodded me, like...
They anally probed me.
Yeah. Yeah. Or they said, like, I think this is what... They gave, like, heights and weights and descriptions of the aliens. Like, he was like, I don't know, like, they were, like, three short guys that were bald and, like... I don't remember much other. I tried to fight them off, and that was it. And I feel like because he's not, like, a well-known name and there's no details, that I'm more inclined to believe him. And
yeah, I agree.
And especially when he went missing, the search dogs were sent in. And it, from what I read, it sounds like they kind of, just, like, lost the scent. Like, he was there, and then he was gone. They weren't able to trace him. No one saw him for 5 days. I doubt, I mean, I guess he could have just been, like, hanging out in the woods for 5 days lost, but...
True.
I don't know.
But I feel like... I don't know. Do you think he's...
I think he's telling the truth. I don't think he made millions off of this.
No, he definitely didn't.
I think for it being the second best well-known abduction case in the United States, for it to have as little details, and it's not my shitty research, there's just, like, no details on this. No, for it having such little details makes me more inclined to believe it. Like, Betty and Barney Hill, super well documented, but that I'm less inclined to believe than Travis Walton's.
Yeah. Yeah, and there doesn't seem like there's a reason, really, that they would have made this story up.
Right, right.
Not that that's, like, something to prove that it's factual, but, like, it almost seems like, what would they gain out of this? They didn't seem like a group, like, that's not, like, your typical group of people that you would expect to make up this elaborate alien abduction story.
Well, and especially a group of 7 people. Like, it's easier to get, like, 2 or 3 people in on a story, but, like, 7 people to corroborate and... corroborate the story and say, like, because, and that's what it sounds like. I don't think there's, like, in detailed interviews with all of them, the crew members, but some of them have come forward, and they were featured in the documentary as well, and they all were like, yeah, no, like, he was abducted by aliens. Like, that is what we saw. We saw him taken aboard this craft and we left. So it was not like them be like, oh, we don't know what happened, like, he got lost. Like, no, we saw this happen.
They were, like, certain.
And these aren't, like, yeah, like you said, they're not, like, you know, like us. They're, like, loggers from the 70s, like, on a work crew, you know?
And aliens, I feel like, weren't that big of a thing back then. Right. Like, they were a thing, but not like they are now.
Yeah. And especially him coming out and saying this, like, oh, yeah, Fire in the Sky was a great movie, but, like, it's absolutely not what my story is. And he's not trying to elaborate it. And he kind of wants the truth to be out there. And I feel like if he wanted to make it more elaborate, if he wanted to be more famous, he could have come up with a better story.
Oh, totally.
But maybe that's the part of it, too. Maybe that's his play, that I'm not going to come up with a better story. I'm going to give them minor details, and hopefully that's what's going to stick with people.
Or he's just, like, a bad storyteller.
Maybe. I believe him, though.
Yeah, I think something happened. I'm not sure if it was alien abduction, but something happened.
Yeah, I think it was aliens. I don't know what else could have happened for all 7 of them to come forward with the same story. And maybe just part of me saying that because I put myself through, like, a 2-hour-long Joe Rogan podcast episode to listen to this.
You love Joe Rogan.
Don't you dare say that.
Don't you dare.
But yeah, that's, like, my really short one, but there's seriously, like, no information on it.
No, I think it's interesting. I think the fact that there's no information, like, little information on it, is, like, information in and of itself.
Right. But that's the thing, is, like, when I was going into it, like, remember when I did Betty and Barney Hill, there was, like, so much information. Yeah. And I thought, like, this was going to be the exact same thing, but, like, so little. It just, like, blew my mind. Whatever.
But I think that's what makes it more convincing.
Yeah. But I guess I should watch Fire in the Sky and kind of compare.
I'm not going to lie. I did fall asleep in the middle of it and then woke back up and watched the end of it. So the the crux of the plot might have been missed out. I might have missed out on, but from what I saw, it was okay.
But it sounds like not Travis's story.
No, definitely not.
Well, if anyone's interested, you can watch the Travis documentary on Amazon. You don't even have to have Amazon Prime. They'll just give it to you for free with ads. Like, they don't care. They want anyone to watch it. And I was like, wow, not even a $2.99 video. It's absolutely free. He was on, actually, the episode of Joe Rogan came out in January, so it's episode number 1597 of the Joe Rogan Experience, if you wanted to listen to his interview with Joe Rogan. And for a Joe Rogan podcast interview, it wasn't that bad, I have to say. I think when Joe Rogan has non-controversial people on there, the episodes go much better.
I agree.
Or maybe it's just I'm biased, like, when he has people that I enjoy listening to on there, I can tolerate the episodes. And he didn't give him much pushback, so who fucking knows. Travis did say on the episode, though, that he feels like aliens think that we are barbaric. Like,
oh, I believe that.
Yeah, because he said that's kind of like the impression he got from when he was like interacting with them. Like, not that he was able to telecommunicate with them, but he knew. Yeah, like, he felt like they saw what we do. And this was in the 70s, and, like, we've only gotten worse since then.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he thinks they're, like, destructive. I think they're just here to, like, investigate and see what's happening, and they kind of like, fuck this planet, we want nothing to do with it.
Yeah, I was gonna say, there's not much to investigate here.
No, there's better planets to look into, I'm sure.
Oh, definitely better planets.
Well, sorry for the shorty. That's my little topic for this week.
It's a bite size. It's
a bite size. Cute. I almost thought about texting you and be like, maybe we should just do a yappy hour, but I think
it's still pretty long. It's still, we're at like an hour and almost 15 minutes now.
True. All right. Well, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and email us at whatdowenowpod@gmail.com. Leave us a five-star review on Apple Podcasts, and we will be back next week with a special episode. Okay, bye! What do we know? What do we know? What do we know?